That does it for our broadcast. Very special congratulations to Dave Enders and his wife, Monica, their new baby, Sophie Grace. Welcome to the world. Democracy Now! Has some job openings, including senior news video producer. Go to democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener, Gina Guzder, Sam Alkoff, Robbie Karen, Hani Massoud, Trina Ndura, and Andre Lewis, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira, and Paul Huckabee, our engineer. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Julie Crosby, Hugh Grant, David Prude, Ariel Boone, Vesta Godars. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Our website is democracynow.org. Thanks so much.
You're listening to WHFR Dearborn. And now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. I'm not getting you. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal, local news and alternative views for Dearborn and the surrounding area. WHFR.fm, the station making waves from Henry Ford College and all volunteer student and alumni staff here, with the exception of yours truly and just two others. One of those tremendous volunteers is my co-host. My name is Jay Koronek, by the way. Station advisor. I frequently forget who I am, but not today, luckily. John Conroy is here, our WHFR News Director. Welcome, John.
Thank you, Jay. It's very fine to be here.
And we had a lot of fun last weekend at Dearborn Homecoming, didn't we?
Certainly did. I spent a little time each day and got to meet a lot of our listeners and watch the scene around us and battle the weather the first day, and then had a beautiful weekend.
Yeah, sure. It got a little wet for a half an hour there on Friday afternoon, but basically a beautiful weekend, a little on the warm side, but there was a good breeze most of the time. So saw a lot of our loyal listeners there. If we saw you, it was wonderful. Thank you for coming by. We got a lot of our listeners coming by, and without too much urging, they admitted they loved us. They listen all the time because we're so special and we're doing something different. And of course, no commercials. It's always great for us. We really enjoyed doing that. And of course, a lot of people went away with some of our extremely discounted t-shirts, baseball caps, and umbrellas, which they might need this afternoon, even since there's some rain forecast finally here. But so a great time was had by all. And as we said last weekend, thanks to all those that came by our WHFR tents and said hello. And we did see a lot of the winners of the primary election too come by. I missed Abdullah Hamoud, but you saw him just recently, like last night, John.
I saw him. And also Susan, we saw Susan Dabaja while we were there. And also Terrence Guerin showed up on Sunday as well.
We gave him a brief little interview on, was it Saturday?
Sunday,
yep. Yes, just chokes me up to think about that. But we do want to get Terrence, Guido,
Rhino,
Guerin, also known as Rhino, here for our 30-minute countdown. See how he does in a 30-minute match, answering the same questions that we asked the other people, because we could not get in touch with him. John really tried. We looked for a website. We could not find anything, and maybe he had one shortly before the end. I did get a mailing at my house, although I talked to some people in West Dearborn. They didn't get that mailing from him. So does he think all of his support is in East Dearborn, or... or that West Dearborn is already solid for Guerin?
Can't speak too much about it.
I have heard rumors from the ancient past that there's more Republicans in West Dearborn than there are in East Dearborn. that may no longer be true. That was decades ago when that was a big time truth. You know, the poorer people would vote Democratic, and they're the ones on the east side. And that, you know, it's a lot of rich people that live on the east side now in various neighborhoods, and so I'm not sure if that's true. But for whatever reasons, I just got a postcard from him asking to vote for him a couple days before the election, and I didn't really think he'd have that much support, but as we found out from our WHFR staff, he has a lot of followers over his 20-year career of wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
And even homecoming weekend, he had a match. He wrestled on Friday night and also Saturday night.
Yeah, I saw him wrestle Friday night at Yak Arena, and then Saturday he was at Olympia Arena. And this was some, I believe, 13 Mile and like Little Mac in that neck of the woods, up in Sterling Heights area.
There's wrestling fans everywhere, I guess. just see some crazy campaign slogans that he doesn't have, but you know, elect me and I'll wrestle state government into shape. You know.
I'll put a full Nelson on that.
That's right. I'll pin him to the mat in 10 seconds. You know.
Okay.
So he does have a lot of support. I thought he spoke well for himself, not with bombastic ego or viciousness or anything in the couple minutes we just heard his voice on Sunday in the station. So I'm not recommending him, folks. I'm saying wait until we do the interview. We'll find out more of his background. He's still kind of an unknown to me. Because we haven't been able to find out much content about him. So we look forward to that. We are going to start making some more phone calls and going to more of his matches, and we will track him down. We just found one of his business cards, and we found out he has a Facebook page. Ooh, so.
Another interesting tidbit about him is that he and Abdullah Hamoud share the same workout place, so they know each other through that as well. You know,
if you want political muscles, you want to develop your political muscles, work out at wherever, and we can't do a commercial, but still, that is ironic. Maybe there's really only one good workout place around here. I don't know. I don't pump iron. I have a couple of strange machines at my house, but
well, you just work on flex time, Jay. You'll be fine.
I see. Flex time. Okay. Yep. Okay. Don't have to go for the muscles. Just keep flexible. Okay.
Yep.
Thank you, John.
Yep.
See, who said that Dearborn Journal, the WHFR journal here in Dearborn, is not useful and helpful?
Yes.
I hope you're taking notes on these things, folks. Well, there are stories.
The one thing I wanted to add also about our homecoming.
Before we get to the stories.
Yes, yeah. Is that our tent, our area where we sold the CDs and records looked like it was really busy the entire, most of the weekend. And I don't know exactly how many were sold, but we looked like it was a beehive of activity, and that was a very popular spot.
About 1,000 CDs and records were sold, approximately.
Okay.
And one person found an LP for $1 and looked interesting, so he actually looked it up, checked it out on eBay.
Huh.
And on eBay, it was selling the same exact album, $125.
Wow.
So he got it for $1.
Big steal.
So,
yeah.
And, of course, the WHFR Record Show, our annual, ninth annual, I think, is coming up October 8th, Saturday, October 8th, right here at the main campus of Henry Ford College. And that will be very big. We'll have professional vendors from all over, as well as more of those WHFR bins, like where the $125 Elvis Presley album was.
Wow.
So you never know. That's one of the fun things about collecting, whether it's antiques, like the show on Channel 56, Antiques Roadshow.
Yeah.
People bring in their what looks to be junk to me, and, oh, that's worth $50,000, and they nearly pass out, and that's the excitement of the show right there. You know,
American Pickers.
And there's American Pickers. Is that still on? Well, anyway,
yeah.
So, that's all coming up in the future, WHFR.FM. We're just trying to stay alive here and keep paying our bills. So that's why we do these events and charge a little bit of money. And thank you for your support and for that turnout last weekend. Top story, though, getting to the local news, is, fall semester at Henry Ford College is starting. Okay, and remember, colleges typically start before Labor Day, K-12 after Labor Day. A couple exceptions to that. I couldn't believe it, but there are a couple of school districts in Michigan. I just found out this morning that little districts, not nearby, that actually start before Labor Day, like the schools used to. But our classes start Thursday, August 25th, and that same week is when most other four-year schools and community colleges in this area also start that week. Maybe not on that Thursday, but they all begin sometime that week. And what we have to say about that, and the school doesn't tell us to push this, God bless them. We just think it's really important because that fall semester is a big deal. It's a time to get 15 full weeks of instruction in things that would interest you, excite you, maybe develop a career enhancement so you get a higher paying job or understand more about what you're doing and therefore secure your job position more, or maybe it'll get you into a new field of study and a new career. And the place to begin, of course, is in the fall semester at any college, and our classes begin Thursday, August 25th. And the point, too, is that I think it was 5 or 6 years ago at least, but if you're not enrolled by the start of classes, you can't get in. You can do add or drop after that, but you can't get in. So, say, well, I'll just go late and pick up something. Not to the fall semester starting on August 25th. We have a very small 12-week semester that starts up 3 weeks later, but not very many classes are offered, not much variety. Okay. Just some really basic stuff. And so that's what you don't want to consider because you wouldn't get the wide range of days, times, or classes offered to you. So, and to mention specifically the college, not today. Well, actually, the Welcome Center is open today, Friday. Welcome Center is a building just on the north side of our north parking lot here in the main campus of Henry Ford College, 5101 Evergreen, just south of Ford Road in Dearborn. And they're open today, but they're going to have special Saturday hours tomorrow, beginning tomorrow, and the following Saturday. So Saturday, August 13th, tomorrow, and next week Saturday, the August 20th, from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. So just bring ID. If you've never been admitted to the college before, you had to bring some proof of residency and who you are. Just the usual items that you might have around, and then you can be admitted and enroll all at the same time. Get that all done all at one time. That's they used to call them Super Saturdays, but people might confuse that with an election day or something. All the primaries were Super Tuesdays or
right,
whatever.
Right.
So,
yeah.
But so it's just very special Saturday sessions at the Welcome Center for admissions and registration. If you have been admitted before and you want to come by and talk to a counselor too, that's also possible on Saturday, August 13th and the 20th from 9 to 1. But next week, the full college, all the offices here, including the Welcome Center, will be open regular business hours, whatever that is, 8 to 4:30 or something.
Starting the 15th?
Yeah, yeah. Starting next Monday, the 15th.
Okay.
Yeah. Although, just so you know, John, here in the Student Center, they're not going to open the cafeteria until the 23rd. So
okay.
We still had to bring food from the outside for our show next Friday. So that's the way it goes. But the college in general will be open and classes start the 25th. So very important for you to know about that.
Yes.
We want to welcome Dr. Michael A. Nealon. Dr. Nealon is our new Vice President of Academic Affairs. And just so you know, academic affairs is the area of instruction at the college that handles social science and communication, humanities, all of the so-called areas that aren't business or career-oriented. We have a different vice president for that. And his background, he was at Lansing Community College for 18 years, lead faculty of their music program. Then he was chair of their entire humanities and performing arts department. Then he became dean of LCC's arts and sciences division. And finally, associate vice president of engaged student learning. That's my favorite kind of student learning, by the way.
Hopefully it'll be people
engaged. The disengaged student learning doesn't really work for me,
No.
But which means I dispute why they have to call it that.
Right.
I mean, It's probably something very special and unique, but I just,
nothing to do with being married, Ajay.
No. Okay. Right. No, that comes later after the engagement.
Yeah.
But married student learning—that's fun too, I bet. Anyway, so he's a teacher. Was a teacher to begin with, and then he's went up the ranks, and he is, I think, one of our first academic deans that actually has a background in an area that might be called the performing arts, music. Although, of course, music can be taught as an academic study of music history and so on. But it's great to have him here. Maybe we'll get him on the show. We can hear a little bit about his background. He is, as I said, head of communication division, which includes telecom and journalism under Susan McGraw, our general manager of WHFR. But her full-time job is the area coordinator for telecom and journalism and teacher, of course, in that area. And communications division reports to Dr. Nealon. So in a way, he's the WHFR boss, too.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got to be really nice to him.
Good man to be friendly with, yeah.
Yeah, well, I haven't met him yet. So he just comes on, actually, officially, he doesn't arrive on campus to start setting up his office until this coming Monday.
But
he'll be here starting Monday. Another quickie story. And then I'll let you toss a few in, John. I know you've got a couple things there, to say the least. State superintendent, and you know who that is, folks. Our regular listeners should know the name of the state superintendent of education.
Yes, well, Brian Whiston, of course, and used to be the Dearborn superintendent.
That's right. Yep. See, John knows. John remembers. Okay. And we had him a couple of times on WHFR Journal here the last couple of years when he was superintendent down here. Well, this is what he did. And again, unfortunately, our state superintendent's office and the State Board of Ed, that he's sort of the chairman of, they don't really have any power in Michigan. Unlike other states, they can't set policy. They don't deal with budget. They just sort of advise. And so he's advising here. And here's the story. This was in mlive.com. Just Tuesday, okay? State Superintendent Brian Whiston says a recently completed education finance study commissioned by the legislature. That's right, folks. That's our state legislature actually paid money, your tax dollars, to find out what it takes to close school funding gaps and invest in programs for low-income children and English language learners. So that's always good to have an official study done. And thank you, Republicans, for supporting that. I bet the Democrats supported that idea, too. Well, now the report has come in, and Whiston said the study offers some tremendous value in that it highlights really important needs that policymakers in Michigan must recognize and act upon, unquote. The study conducted by Denver-based research firm says that an ideal spending level is $8,667 per student, not $8,666, because that would be too little. And 8,668? Oh, that would be too much. That would be wasting money. Just joking here, folks. Right now, per pupil funding in Michigan and in our various districts, school districts, range from about $7,500, let's just even it out, to $8,200. So the basic idea here is that the firm that they hired tells them that even the districts in Michigan that are best funded by the legislature at this point in time are still $400 or $500 below what they recommend. And the districts that are less well-funded, they're almost $1,100 below. So more funding is needed, and Brian Whiston says, yes, please do fund them better, in my own words. He said, quote, the state should be concerned that many of the measures of equity and fiscal neutrality have trended up slightly in recent years, suggesting that the school finance system may be getting, well, this is the study, the school finance system may be getting less equitable over time. So that's between the school districts. Then, of course, in terms of students, too. Students somewhere are getting more funding, therefore better access to education and to special needs of one sort or the other, not capital S, capital N. So this study was discussed by Whiston during Tuesday's State Board of Ed meeting, and it was required under this bill passed by the legislature in 2014 as part of a package to improve Michigan roads. Go figure how they pass laws here, that they got this education study funded by putting it in as part of the roads package, which was approved, but remember, it's not too hot a bill because it hasn't even started funding to repair the roads as needed here yet, and it's not going to be enough money, as everyone says, including Terrence Rhino Guerin, the Republican. He claims that that's one of his priorities, along with all the Democrats in the legislature, is to get the adequate funding to improve our infrastructure, such as roads and so on. And of course, it says here in the story at MLive.com, whether the legislature will take up any of the study's recommendations is unknown for now. Yeah, so that's the way it goes with that. There is also another spin, and for the sake of balance here, I have to say that the Mackinac Center, or Mackinac Center, however you want to pronounce it, they're a conservative think tank. And, of course, that's that designation as a think tank is wrong in several ways. Number one, they're not a tank at all. And nobody's ever said tanks very much to them because they're not really doing thinking. They're finding ways to agree with current conservative and or, if you will, generally in general, Republican points of view. So it's all speaking to the converted already, and it's information that you cherry pick to fit your point of thinking. Now, it's not just the Mackinac Center that is like this. There's think tanks all around the country, but unfortunately, most of them are just as biased if you look at what they're doing, either liberal or conservative. There's not many that could be called fairly independent. So you have to be careful when you look at this. Again, what they just said recently in regard to the in response to this, I didn't bring the story in, but it's up on their Michigan, the Mackinac Center website, is that if you figure in federal financing to public schools in Michigan, then it looks like that the poor kids actually get a lot more funding than kids in other districts. So it's not just the Michigan funding, but it's the federal funding that comes in. But of course, I think you have to look at the federal funding. All these monies are not equal. Some of them go to special programs that are absolutely needed in some of these poorer school districts, like Head Start program of providing food at breakfast time, mm-hmm. and maybe even lunches. And that isn't needed so much in districts where the kids have, the families are rich enough, they can bring lunch, or they can buy, they can afford to buy lunches. So I don't think that's quite the same thing, Mackinac Center, because the federal funding is paying for things that, number one, the state's not paying for, but it's things that other districts are not desperately in need of. Mm-hmm. So the richer districts. So that's irrelevant. You can't just say, well, the poor already get a lot more than the rich kids get. That's not true. The poor actually do need more support in a wide variety of ways, not just for the teachers and for the equipment and the text and so on in the classrooms, but actually things that make the school a good place for education. And if students aren't well fed, I really believe in a good breakfast myself. If you don't start out the day with a good breakfast, you're running on empty most of the day. And I even understand some people say, well, I need a big lunch. You can't catch up at lunch.
Not the same.
If after you wake up, your blood sugar is low, and then if you don't eat a good breakfast and a good sized breakfast in an hour or hour and a half, it you can't make it up.
Nope.
You're I don't know, John, you might,
I can attest to that,
issues, Jay, about, yeah, blood sugar, oh, and, yeah, that you're supposed to keep the blood sugar levels up by good meals several times a day. Now, don't get very hungry, but I think the breakfast meal is probably the most important of the day.
If you start your day the right way, then you have a much better chance of having, like you say, the balance, mm-hmm. for the rest of the day.
Yep. Of course, we're not doctors, and remember, all opinions in this show are not necessarily those of Henry Ford College. So always check with your local. But I bet the doctors will tell you about the importance of a good breakfast. So anyway, so Whiston has done his job, and the state board have done their job, and they hope that something will happen. Well, this, just to finish the article, though, this is kind of interesting. Ari Adler, he's a spokesperson for Governor Rick Snyder, I think he's his current spokesperson. I think it's his press secretary, in fact. Ari Adler is his name. Mm-hmm. Since the last one, you know, quit because of the Flint
right.
debacle, said that a commission created by the governor, known as the 21st Century Education Commission, will consider the study as it crafts its own recommendations to improve education in Michigan. Ah, that outside Denver agency, what do they know about Michigan schools? They might be too independent, you know, or too liberal. Who knows? So what the governor has done, he doesn't, even though his own legislature, and it was a bill that he signed, of course, that had many things in it, that created that, in 2014, the need for the study that took 2 years to get, that says we need more funding for all of our schools, for all of our students in Michigan, from the state. But the governor now, forget about it. I'm setting up my own 21st century. Why did he call it the 22nd century? As long as he's at it. I mean, you know, yes, we're in the 21st century. You know, we're almost 20 years into it. So you got a big deal name, 21st century. We're already there. Okay. But he's setting up his own education commission because he doesn't trust those other people, I guess, even though he signed the bill that approved of it. And he'll get his own recommendations, and maybe they'll look at the Denver study too. So Adler said, quote, "It's not simply a matter of increasing the base funding, but ensuring that the billions of dollars already spent on education by Michigan's taxpayers are being used as well as they could be. Too often," Mr. Adler said, "people want to immediately jump to a conclusion by saying, if we only had X number of dollars, then everything would be better. But we have seen districts like Highland Park, which closed several years ago, unable to sustain a quality education system for its students, despite the fact it was receiving more than $14,000 per pupil in combined state and federal funding." Yeah, there was mismanagement there. That's always a possibility. I mean, it's not just money coming in, and it will go to the right places. But it's a matter of the people in the district, too. And I'm not sure what the state can do about people. Obviously, Highland Park, that was under
emergency management
for their schools.
Oh, yeah.
So if they closed, where was the emergency manager? Where was the great state-appointed emergency managers for the last 5 years plus in Detroit, which got sort of a bailout, but it's not enough money? Everybody says that was a terrible, terrible deal. And so it's been a disaster. So the state of Michigan doesn't really know what the heck to do either. John Austin, who is the president of the State Board of Ed, said providing more funding for students who face the biggest challenges will help improve learning, period. He didn't say period. I said period. So I do think it's a basic component because you can't do special things. You can't encourage teachers to teach well and to be innovative if there's not extra money and funds. If they're constantly cutting the teachers' salaries and their pensions and their benefits, well, they're on the bottom lines, folks. They just can't do a good job. And it's a long, long day every day of the week for K-12 teachers. And I've never done that directly, but my daughter does, and believe me, I know of what I speak here. So perhaps, certainly, we want to talk to one of the other candidates that we promised to get for you. It was a statewide candidate from the local area, Ishmael Ahmed, who we all know locally, if we know anything locally. He was the founder of Access, mm-hmm. And indirectly, somewhat directly through Access, the Arab American National Museum, and of course, Concert of Colors was his idea too. And he has a part-time position with U of MD as sort of a provost, external provost, as they call them, to relate to the community, and that's fine. But he wants to go back to Lansing, where he was at one point the head of the whole social services department for the state of Michigan. Very frustrating because of budget cuts there constantly. He was appointed by Jennifer Granholm, but he is running as a Democrat, and he's running for State Board of Ed in the November 2nd election. So just because he is local, we want to bring him in and see what he can tell us about his spin on this job and the situation with funding too. Okay, John?
I just wanted to offer one thing about Brian Whiston. That is, it is his job, to help make sure that federal funding and state funding aren't going in the same direction or kept in the right order. That way there's less waste all the way throughout the system. And that's what he was good at in Dearborn as far as ferreting out waste is concerned.
Yes, yes, so. Absolutely. I mean, the State Board of Ed doesn't have the power. I mean, they can ask for information and they can visit and they can recommend. But again, they don't have that much power, even with the local districts, to do very much. But their influence and their support, I think, is very important. It's good that we have that agency. It's too bad the legislature and the governor don't seem to care about them. And why? It's because it's a partisan elected job.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, not Winston. Winston was appointed by the group who were elected to the State Board of Ed.
Right.
And the vast majority of them are Democrats. That's because they're voted on statewide. So everybody in the whole state of Michigan votes on who they want for a State Board of Education member. And Democrats are actually in the majority, or in the plurality anyway. There's more Democrats than Republicans in the state. Awful lot of independents. So I can't say that the Democrats are actually in the majority out of those three groups these days. But any statewide position, there's always more Democrats voting than there are Republicans. And you say, well, why do we have a Republican governor then? Well, that's just the way it goes. The candidates haven't been attractive enough on the Democratic side. That's all I can say. A tough nerd image of Snyder was kind of attractive. I mean, I also felt that he was kind of from a outside government, that he was less political.
He was a businessman.
He was smart. He was just smart. And look where that's got us, folks. He is term limited out, by the way. He will not be running again. And his term is done in 2018. So is it next year then we have to vote for governor? I don't know. It's coming up. Anyway, okay. Moving on then. Yes, thank you, John, for that comment.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just take a little break. There's a couple of comments from Jim Hightower and Jack Lessenberry. Lessenberry, of course, locally and local. He writes a column in the Metro Times, which is not the same thing as his opinions that we play on the show here, although sometimes similar. But he's employed at Michigan Radio in Ann Arbor and has commentaries and involvement in their news broadcast almost every day out there from Ann Arbor and around the state. Plus, he's an adjunct professor at, or maybe full-time, I'm not sure, at Wayne State University, too, in journalism. So let's take a listen to their two opinions. First, Jim Hightower. And we'll be right back with more of the WHFR Journal. WHFR.FM, the station making waves.
The reason that I believe Bernie Sanders' political rebellion will persevere is that it's organic. Rather than being an artificial marketing creation sprouted in some D.C. hothouse by national groups and moneyed interests, this is a wildflower movement that sprang up spontaneously, took root, and spread its seeds across thousands of zip codes. Contrary to the conventional wisdom of most political pundits, his supporters are not giving up on politics. Why would they? After all, this talented core of pro-democracy activists seemingly came out of nowhere, won 23 states, virtually tied in five others, and revolutionized the Democrats' message, policy agenda, and method of campaigning, so they're eager to push forward. I've been out there among them for months. From Great Falls to Cedar Falls, Carson City to New York City, and most recently at the Democratic Convention in Philadelphia. No way they're going to burn out and fold, for they're battling the gross inequality and corporate rapaciousness that has a stranglehold on our democracy and on their own well-being. They don't see their involvement as part of the usual political game, but as the real politics of America, the ongoing historic struggle. The reason that I believe Bernie's...
I'm Jack Lessenberry. A year or so ago, one of my students saw me talking with Kathleen Strauss, a longtime member of the State Board of Education. Later, he asked me who she was. When I told him, he said he hadn't known there was such a board, and asked me what they did. Well, my guess is that most adults probably know that there is a state board, though they might find it hard to explain what they do. And frankly, their duties are fairly ambiguous. There are 8 members, they serve 8-year terms, and whether it makes sense or not, they're put on the ballot by one of the political parties. They aren't paid much, by the way, so nobody runs to make a cushy living. They are there because they care about public education. Michigan's Constitution gives them one specific duty, to appoint a superintendent of public instruction. Beyond that, the State Board is charged with leadership and general supervision over all public education, except for colleges and universities. The board is also to serve as a general planning and coordinating body for all public education and to advise the legislature as to the financial requirements of education in Michigan. But in practice, the board has little real power to do any of that beyond their personal powers of persuasion. The legislature controls education funding in Michigan, and local school boards and superintendents are often not inclined to want state officials to tell them how to run their affairs. For many years, most people paid little attention to the state board, but that's begun to change, though not necessarily for the best of reasons. It's had to do with the culture wars. First, the Board of Education was under siege over the so-called Common Core standards, which were designed to make sure all students could compete in the economy of the future. Then this year, there was a huge outcry over what bathroom facilities transgender students should use. Board President John Austin took what I thought was a courageous stand. He thought it should be up to the individual student to decide and said the fear of being bullied was the greatest threat to education. Austin, a Democrat, is running for re-election this year. Democrats are also running Ismail Ahmed, the founder of the private welfare organization Access, and a former director of the Michigan Department of Health and Human Services. Republicans will pick their candidates at their state convention August 27th. Normally, the party whose candidate at the top of the ticket wins pretty much sweeps the education races. However, this year it could be that conservatives may attempt to make this a referendum on bathroom issues. Ismail Ahmed may also be targeted for another reason. He is a Muslim. That likely cost him election to the University of Michigan Board of Trustees a year after September 11th. I can't say who citizens should elect to the state board, since I don't yet know who all the candidates are. But I do know this. There's nothing more important than ensuring that all our citizens get the best possible education. That's something our state's future depends on. I hope that'll be the only issue anyone considers when they actually vote.
Jack Lessenberry is Michigan Radio's news analyst.
And he's frequently ours, too. Thank you very much, Michigan Public Radio, for allowing us to use that. And anyone can use it and listen to it. His comments are available from their website, michiganradio.org. Let me just, and of course, he was following up on some of the things we were saying about the State Board of Ed, and I mentioned Ismail Ahmed in there too. And of course, Jim Hightower talked about the, you know, the future of the support for Bernie Sanders. If that's a movement, how's it going to influence elections, either short term or long term? So, hope you found those valuable. We do. A couple of important things. Well, here, this is a twist or turn. Remember that in Dearborn, last December, there was a shooting by the Dearborn police of an unarmed man, and that, I think, was sent to investigation by the city of Detroit. And in January, a woman was shot, unarmed woman was shot by a police officer in Dearborn and died. And that now has, again, we still do not have any full statements about the outcome. We do believe that both officers are still on emergency leave, paid administrative leave, and so we don't know the details there. The Wayne County Medical Examiner's Office did rule the shooting of the woman in January 27th, her name was Janet Wilson, ruled that the shooting was a homicide, you know, but whether or not there are circumstances that made that homicide, you know, acceptable, appropriate, we don't know yet. And anyway, they filed a lawsuit this week, a wrongful death lawsuit in federal court against the city of Dearborn, and the police officer involved, his name is James Wade. So the name, his name has come out now. So that lawsuit was actually filed on August 4th. And I won't go over the background of that situation, which was unfortunate because it's all going to be adjudicated now somehow, I guess. And the city hasn't yet been served with the lawsuit as of August 10th, so I'm not sure why that's true. But that's a statement from Kathleen Trent of the Department of Public Information in Dearborn. And I've never got a chance to meet her. I didn't know that she was part of the department, so it must be a new hire. So good for you. It's always great when somebody gets a job anywhere these days. She added that the city has a policy of not commenting on pending legislation, litigation. Of course not, and we understand that. But interestingly, that the lawyer involved here who filed this wrongful death lawsuit had to file a Freedom of Information Act request. That's FOIA, very special thing, in March, asking the city to release the shooting evidence from the shooting, including dash cam video footage and the 9/11 dispatch audio. But City of Dearborn denied the request under a Michigan criminal procedural statute. And the lawyer said, it's such a fragile time in community relations with law enforcement, it's deplorable that any city would refuse the opportunity for transparency. So the lawyer is now requesting a federal order, along with that lawsuit, to release the footage and other investigation materials to the public. And I've said before on this show, I do not understand, and it's not just the case in Dearborn, but around the U.S., why investigations can take a year or two. I mean, it's a single incident, probably takes no more than 10 or 15 seconds for the final conclusion anyway. Probably no more than a dozen people involved. In some of them, there's no video. And how long is it? How many people do they have investigating? And how long does it take to interview a dozen people? What, do you have to interview them for 5 days straight, day and night? And who's taking notes? Do you have to then have to wait for 2 months for somebody to transcribe the tapes onto a piece of paper? I mean, it just doesn't, I don't understand how all these cases, and they say, well, justice has to move slowly. It doesn't have to move that slowly, folks, in my humble opinion. I mean, they just don't have enough qualified people doing the investigations. It can't take that long. I'm not talking about how fast things move on TV crime shows.
Right.
Of course, get DNA results in 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. It would take like 3 weeks to get some DNA results here in Detroit, police procedures, and in Dearborn, maybe longer. I understand that reality and fantasy difference, but it just completely has never been explained to me why it takes so long. And then finally, once it's done, which shouldn't take that long, everything should be transparent. Everything should be out there. Oh, my gosh. So I just hope that all the investigations get completed quickly, and whether or not the lawsuit has grounds for it, that's up to the court system to figure out, not me. And it depends on the evidence. And right now, it looks like they don't have all the evidence in. Mm-hmm. So, and because there's really been no final conclusions from either of those two investigations, the January investigation is 8 months past, and the December one is 9 months past, and still no official reports from either of those entities. And again, the one in December, that's the State Police of Michigan. No. Yes, state. No. Well, either the State Police or the one of the State Police, and the other is the Detroit Police. I think the December one was Detroit Police, and they already concluded their investigation. I reported this on this show about a month ago, and they sent it to Kim Worthy, the prosecutor's office in Wayne County, and we haven't heard anything about that. But because they sent it to her again, they didn't publicize it. It wasn't open to the public to see what was in there, and there's been no concluding evidence from the Michigan Department of Police about this wrongful death. The possibility of wrongful death of the shooting of Janet Wilson in January. Oh, my goodness. But just to let you know, hopefully we have a good attorney for the city of Dearborn.
We should have another chance to speak with
$10 million.
Maybe we should speak with the chief again.
Yeah, well, you can't comment while something's ongoing, though.
No.
Because, you know, they might slip or say something one way or another, and that could be used back in court to either toss the case out or to win the case right there. So they just can't talk about it until the fat lady sings, so to speak. And no disrespect to fat ladies
Well, I just got to believe he's
heavily
got more.
Weighted people.
He has more updates than we do as far as what is actually.
Well, he
happening.
Does. I bet he does, but I'm sure he can't share. We interviewed him just as our usual courtesy interview, all positive about homecoming last weekend on the air.
Oh, you did?
Okay. Laura did. All Laura Rousset got him this year. And he's always very helpful and open, but there's just things he can't talk about while it's still being investigated. That's too bad. Oh, well, moving on then. Just shuffling papers here. Ah, yes, all right. Attorney General Bill Schutte, and you know him, right? Yes, well, anyway, he has now filed an emergency motion, and this was as of Wednesday this week, and this is from MichiganRadio.org, asking a federal appeals court to reinstate a ban on the practice of straight party voting for the November election. If you remember, our legislators and governor, in their wisdom, decided that the people of Michigan cannot use a single mark on the ballot to vote for a political party's entire slate of candidates, that they must go down and either vote for or against every single candidate on the ballot. And of course, there's pro and con to that issue. I think we've indicated in the show that there are things that could be said on either side, which is better. But it is an option that if people want to use it here in Michigan, many people do use that in the past. And Republicans don't like it because, of course, the little, if anybody votes straight ticket, that means Wayne County gets Democrats. State Board of Ed gets Democrats, who we just mentioned, and they think everybody should vote for the individuals and focus their attention, of course, on who's Republican or who's Democrat, perhaps. I don't know. But in fact, there's 40 other states out of 50 in the United States that have eliminated straight ticket voting, and most all of those are Republican legislatures. If you think there's a conspiracy, then maybe there is. I don't know. But, of course, Attorney General says that the Michigan law only addresses how people vote, not their right to vote. Remember, in July, a federal judge blocked the Michigan law that banned the practice of allowing voters to use a single mark for an entire slate. And the judge said it violated voting rights of urban African Americans who are most likely to use the option and would lead to longer lines on Election Day. And I don't doubt that. That's certainly true, that longer lines. So the Attorney General for the state of Michigan, representing the governor and the legislature, he says the state has a right to decide if people should have to vote for candidates and not for a political party. Yeah, I think there shouldn't be any political parties at all. Ha, 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 ha. So if you want to extend that, Mr. Attorney General, I think we ought to ban all political parties. How do you feel about that one? Just let the individuals try to fight it out with the voters. Imagine the size of the primary elections then.
Yeah.
The thing about political parties, they're not in the Constitution of the United States. They were never mentioned. They were never, it was never talked about. That they should have priority access or any access to the ballots or to politics and our establishment. So if you're a strict constitutionalist, you've got to constantly consider the question about the value of political parties and all the special things they've set up for themselves, like the political debates and so on. That is all, to my interpretation, I'm not a lawyer, of course, that's unconstitutional to me, because it's not in the Constitution anywhere that political parties should have all that power to dictate the shape of our elections and our government, for that matter, too. Well, anyway, We are where we are, and we can't go back too far on that. Still, okay. Oh, in regard to that, we have only about 12 minutes before Highway 61, The Best in the Blues, begins our 4 hours of blues this afternoon. Highway 61 with Kitty Love, 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. today, 4 to 6. Mike Holloway follows up with his Go With the Flow show, both of them great blues shows featuring a lot of local blues artists. I wanted to mention that in 3 weeks, on September the 2nd, I won't be here, and I've decided to give John the day off, too. We're going to be featuring two shows, one in the place of Democracy Now! From 12 to 1, and the second one in place of The Journal. The first hour, and both of them have been produced this week and broadcast this week by WBUR in Boston. It's the show called On Point. It's carried by WDET, but we're going to rebroadcast, and we have the public right to do that, rebroadcast their two shows from this week. So the first hour at 12 noon on September 2nd, I know it's Labor Day weekend, but we're going to make sure that both of them get on the podcast, including the 12 to 1 o'clock. I will make sure that by the following week, I'll get both of them in the WHFR Journal podcast so you can listen to them anytime. The first one is a great hour interviewing Gary Johnson, who is the presidential candidate of the Libertarian Party. Mm-hmm. John knew that. Mm-hmm. And the second hour is a full hour interview of Dr. Jill Stein, who's the presidential candidate of
the Green Party.
Yes, yes. I'm just throwing these at John right and left here, and he's catching them good, real good. John, thank you.
You've broken me in very well regarding libertarians and the Green Party, yeah. Jay.
Well, there are alternative choices. I'm just saying in November, the political system, if you're worried about the domination of the Democrats and Republicans, and you can look from several angles. You have to admit those two parties dominate and get things their way because they're the only two parties that have any power, okay? So if you want to support, I'm not advocating it, but if you want to support a third party, there's two really strong third parties running in the November election here in Michigan, maybe a couple more, too. And, in fact, Gary Johnson was asked at the end of that interview that you'll be hearing on from 12 to 1 o'clock on September 2nd here. What about the negative effect of your campaign on the whole election? You know, it's the whole thing about it being a spoiler, and therefore you'll take votes away from somebody else, and then the other candidate, the other big-time candidate, will win. As Ralph Nader was criticized in the year 2000 of being a spoiler candidate for the Green Party, by the way, mm-hmm. Who took votes away from Al Gore that allowed George Bush to win. That election, when in fact Bush won because all the votes in Florida did not get finished being counted. The Supreme Court of the United States stopped it. And their excuse was, well, it's not fair to George Bush. What? Not getting the right count in Florida? And so as the state would go, that would have tipped it over one way or the other to either Gore or Bush. And Nader wasn't a factor in that. There. I mean, yes, he got a lot of votes that maybe if he wasn't in the race, maybe they would have gone to Gore. But the point was, it was our Supreme Court that was the spoiler, I think, in a different meaning there, of the election in 2000. They would not let the final count be finished. And it's crazy. There was no reason other than, well, it's not fair to George W. Bush to have to wait any longer. Duh. You know, a fair count is a fair count as long as it takes to do it. That's how long it should take. Anyway, that's just, again, my personal opinion. And for those of you that just want to, you know, pass the scepter and coronate somebody without democracy, then that's your call, I guess. But I don't see it that way. Well, what's kind of interesting is that there was a poll taken on commondreams.org, and that's a website that collects a lot of opinions from people, knowledgeable people across the United States, about politics, about education, about the state of the world. And they did a survey, but the reason I'm going to share this with you is because surveys depend on how you do them, okay? A lot of surveys for president, they say, well, how would you vote, Hillary or Donald? That is, Clinton or Trump. And if they don't include any other names, well, of course, the other people don't get any points. If they only got two choices, well, there you go. But in fact, on your ballot, you'll get a lot more than two choices. So the best polls have a lot more possibilities. And this one from commondreams.org, and yes, they're very liberal. Okay. 41, almost 42% say they would vote for Hillary Clinton. However, amazingly, over 33% said they'd vote for Jill Stein. And 13% are still holding out, this is what this poll was just done this week, for they would write in Bernie Sanders' name. Of that same group, over 80% supported Bernie Sanders during the primary. It's almost a Bernie Sanders website, commondreams.org, and I wasn't aware of that leaning. But other people got votes, too. Undecided was 6.5%. Donald Trump. See, there's some Trump supporters there, 2.4%. Gary Johnson, only 0.8%. I just think if they're going to do a poll, first of all, they can be a representative poll, which is scientific, and they find people of the age groups and the right geographical situation who would typically vote. That's very important, yeah, to do a poll with those who would typically, or who say they intend to vote. Because what if you're doing a poll with people who never vote? They've still got opinions, maybe, probably, but that doesn't matter, does it, if they don't vote?
They don't take their step forward, no.
Right. And I think all the polls should have at least four choices. That would be Clinton, Trump, Stein, and Johnson, at least. Those are the four political parties that seem to be getting the most attention and will be on the ballot in the majority of states, including Michigan. They'll be on the ballot there. So try to find out what's going on there. Well, finally, we've got a couple of upcoming events. John, you probably want to update us on the free concerts at the Top Dog.
Certainly do. Tonight at the Top Dog, Coney Restaurant and Bar, it's Jazz Friday. And as every Friday happens, the Rich Michaels Trio will be playing. And tonight their special guest is Chris Collins on the sax. Very nice night. It's always well attended, and we have they have a special menu and a nice lounge with any kind of drink you can think of. So come on by and have a great time from 7 to 10, no cover charge at all, at Michigan and Schaefer.
Yeah, we like to support free music, and you should support local musicians wherever you find them. Certainly today, it's part of our tradition of, I think Joanne Kruczynska started it, the blues calendar for what's happening in the weekend and into next week. Every week we do that, and Mike Holloway gets the chance to share that with our listeners starting about 4:30 each Friday afternoon. Here's a couple more things. Two things coming up tomorrow. If you are using the summertime for sort of cleaning out the house, there's a lot of toxic things in your house, hazardous materials such as paint, stains, dyes, glue, carpet cleaner, furniture, and nail polish. So if you've got a couple bottles of nail polish there, can be included in getting rid of it. Bathroom cleaners that old, unused, unneeded, stain removers, solvents, pharmaceutical waste, fertilizer, lawn chemicals, and all of these things will be collected at the Household Hazardous Waste Day, which is tomorrow for Wayne County. But it's not in Dearborn this year. It's at Westland Shopping Center, Warren Avenue in Westland, tomorrow, Saturday, August 13th, from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. The next one doesn't come up for Wayne County until Saturday, October 8th, but you're going to be too busy at a record show to take your hazardous waste to Taylor at Wayne County Community College down there. So definitely get rid of your household hazardous waste tomorrow, 8 to 2 p.m., 8 a.m. to 2 p.m., Westland Shopping Center, Warren Road in Westland. I didn't get to antifreeze car stuff too. Antifreeze, motor oil, automotive dry cell batteries, fluorescent bulbs, fire extinguishers, smoke detectors, thermostats. Shouldn't toss that in the regular trash. Computer monitors, CPUs, printers, keyboards, cell phones, and televisions. If you can't trade them in somehow or recycle them somewhere else, you can bring them to this Household Hazardous Waste Day in Westland Shopping Center tomorrow. And do something for the animals, like adopt a pet. If you're done with your vacation for the year, maybe you want to get a new member in your household and share the love. Friends for Animals of Metro Detroit, formerly known as Friends of the Dearborn Animal Shelter, is that wasn't another quiz, John. He's ready to jump in there with the slightest hesitation. He thinks it's a... I'm quizzing him.
No, but I remember when we changed the name was changed. Right. We talked about that.
Yeah, there was a little to do. Some of the council members said, we pay the money, and now they changed their name. Mm-hmm. They're still serving the same people they were serving before, and they think they can get more donations, actually, and more support, more volunteers, if people know that they're not just a Dearborn thing. You know, it's Friends for the Animals of Metro Detroit. Pretty much all volunteer run, like WHFR, with a couple of paid people at the top to keep things in place. And so it's a wonderful organization. And they have a big inventory of adoptable animals. They're going to have a special Adopt-A-Pet event tomorrow, August 13th, from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the Home Depot parking lot. That's Fairlane Drive in Allen Park, at one of those two shopping centers on the hill there. But yes. at the Home Depot parking lot. In Allen Park. More than 50 dogs, cats, puppies, and kittens from the Dearborn-based group will be at the event and ready to leave with new owners. By the way, August 20th, which is a week from tomorrow, is International Homeless Animal Day, said Executive Director Elaine Green. Our goal is to have all of our shelter dogs and cats in forever homes by that date. Help us place all of our animals by visiting the adoption event August 13th at Home Depot. Noble cause there. In West Dearborn tonight, this afternoon, 2 o'clock, it's WHFR Dearborn you're listening to. The Renfields, they're a rock and alternative country group. They'll be performing at the Bryant Library Muirhead Plaza, between the Bryant Library and Buddy's Pizza, by the way, tonight. They begin at 5 o'clock and run until 9 o'clock. It's one of their special concert series. And let's see, are the food trucks there? I think so too.
Food trucks are there, yep.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And they'll have a wide variety of foods. But the food trucks are really great at homecoming. I tried a couple of them. There were 6 of them.
Delicious.
And they had some really good stuff there.
Yep.
Okay. All right. So that's all the news as we can squeeze into our hour for Dearborn and the surrounding area. Thank you for listening to us. It's time for Highway 61. John, thank you for listening to me every hour and for being here.
Well, you're
going to be off vacationing or doing something wild and crazy next Friday.
Next Friday I will be.
And you highly recommend Ernie's.
Ernie, yes.
Ernie, the play.
The play was done, I saw it last night at the... theater at the City Theater at which was the place that I saw it at? City Theater.
What city? Detroit?
In Detroit, yes.
In Detroit somewhere, okay. Yeah. And it's a play about Ernie Harwell, the great broadcaster for
the
Detroit Tigers.
And it was a fantastic show, and our own Brenda was collecting tickets at the box office.
That's right.
Or giving tickets at the box office.
And you think that maybe tonight is the last performance.
Hockey Town, that's what it was. Hockey Town Cafe.
All right, Hockey
and
Town.
And there were rumors about that, Jay, but I'm hoping those are just rumors because very well attended. Everybody had a great time.
That's it's probably 8 o'clock start or something. But check out Hockey Town Cafe for a great Detroit cultural experience.
It is 8 o'clock.
The play Ernie. Yeah. And I know it's private profit, but he was a great great man in Detroit for many, many years. Okay, let's move on. And now, Highway 61.